Blog Talk Radio.
Here comes the introduction.
Let's get lost in a better place. Pick up the world, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. Open your mind. In your heart, gain new knowledge for a fresh new start. MJ Network will bring you there. So let's talk about it when live and on the air.
Good morning, everyone. This is MJ Network, and we are so live on the air with Pamela Samuels Young, and we're going to talk about a very important topic. We're going to talk about abuse and discretion, the book, and sexting. And that beautiful introduction is compliments of Rachel and Michael from Trinity House Entertainment Inc.com, specially made for MJ Network. MJ meaning my sister, who I miss, Marcia Joyce. And we are going to talk about abuse and discretion. Grillin has an inappropriate picture on his cell phone that was sent to him from an account on Snapchat. You guys better be careful out there. He's called into the principal's office, and what happens next, you just won't believe. So, good morning. How are you? And I'm so glad you're here.
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
Well, this book came from PJ Nunn, who's great, and it came as a surprise. And when I read it, I said I have to definitely talk about this because sexting is serious. So,
yes, it
our
is.
Listeners and yeah, this is very serious because I've even said it to my nieces and nephews that are teens. Be careful what you put on Instagram, Facebook, and be careful because it's going to come back and haunt you. So give our listeners a brief summary of the book and why did you decide to do this? Because I read the article that you sent me too. This is serious.
Okay, let me start by why I decided to write it. I'm a lawyer. I'm not practicing anymore. As of about 2 years ago, I'm now a full-time author. But I'm always typically looking for something that's surprising to me to use as a topic for one of my books. And I happened to be talking to one of my law school classmates who's a criminal defense attorney, and he was complaining about having yet another sexting case with another teen who was facing these awful consequences. And I was basically like, what are you talking about? And when he got through telling me about the prevalence of teen sexting and what the severe consequences are, you know, not only possibly time in juvenile hall or in a juvenile camp, but having to register as sexual predators, sex offenders, if convicted, I was stunned that this was happening. So I immediately hung up the phone, began to research the topic, and I was stunned at the broad, wide-ranging number of cases all across the country. Schools are dealing with it, communities are dealing with it, and it is definitely a teen epidemic. So more about the book. Graylin is a model 14-year-old who gets something on his phone that I don't want to give too much away that literally changes his life. He's thrown into the middle of a sexting case. And my goal in the book was to highlight the sexting problem, but also take you through the juvenile justice system. I never practiced juvenile law, which is very different from the adult court system. And I learned so much as a lawyer and wanted to convey that to my readers.
Well, I think it's going to be conveyed to an awful lot of people after they read it. And I think that this is the type of book that I would even recommend to young teens and young adults to read because I never did Snapchat before until my niece showed me how to do it. And you got to be careful. She taught me how to be silly. Well, I can be silly. And
yep,
we made silly
yep.
pictures.
Snapchat just, is amazing.
It's amazing, but we didn't put any pictures anywhere. And we just, you know, sent them to each other because it was funny. They are funny. But this is serious. So as an educator myself, besides teens, there are other groups of people that need to read this. And as an educator in the schools, would it be appropriate for the schools, namely the guidance counselor or even the gym teacher or sex education teachers in high school, to talk about this topic? Can they do that legally?
Yes, they can and they are. If you look, I mean, all across the country, school districts mm-hmm. are grappling with that because there have been entire schools that have had sexting epidemics. Mm-hmm. I live in the LA area, and the Los Angeles School District has a campaign called Now Matters Later. And it's really mm-hmm. aimed at helping, talking to teens overall about the consequences of teen sexting, and that, you know, 10 years from now, you're working on a job, what you posted online will matter.
Yeah.
But schools definitely are dealing with it and grappling with it, yes.
I hope they're dealing with it up where I am in New York, because I begin to wonder sometimes.
But there have been there have been many cases, some cases out of New York where some schools have been involved in it. So I'm sure they are. And what I like about the New York area that hasn't happened in some states, many states have dealt with this by lessening the penalties. Because mm-hmm. let me go back and explain, because why teen sexting is different from sexting. You remember Congressman mm-hmm. Anthony Weiner, who was
yes.
sexting an underage child, and he got convicted of that. What happens is, why teen sexting is different, and why teen sexting is child pornography, because you are sexting the image of someone under the age of 18. So
mm-hmm.
As an adult, if I send a naked picture to my boyfriend as an adult, that is not a crime. If I send a picture to an underage person of myself, I mean, that's, you know, delinquency of a minor. But if that minor, that 16-year-old sexts me, whether I'm an adult or another child, a picture, that teen has just distributed child pornography. Child pornography is a sexual image of someone under the age of 18. So now that teen who has sexted that picture has committed two crimes: possession of child pornography, even though it's his own picture, and distribution of child pornography. And prosecutors all across the country are charging kids for this. And why I say New York is, I like New York, because New York has done what California and many states haven't done. For a first offense for sexting in New York, the community service, you're not out of the bat charged with possession of child pornography and distributing child pornography if it is a minor case. Because, you know, there have been some really outrageous cases where someone will get an image of another teen, post it all throughout the school, embarrass them with it, blackmail them with it, all those kind of crazy things. And those cases are dealt with more severely. But some states have changed their sexting laws because they realize, you know, this is a different age. I grew up with Lucy and Ricky Ricardo on TV sleeping in the different beds. And our today's teens, all they see is sex. So to now punish them for the society that we raised them up in, I think is very hypocritical.
I agree with you. I mean, it's sad, but you know what? Also, I noticed that a lot of teens are left on their own after school. And rather than come home and do your homework and parents are out, half the time they don't even know what they're doing. I know that from personal experience, that a lot of teens are just, I'm going to go with my friend after school, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And we ask the parent, do you know where so-and-so is? Oh, no, she's somewhere. I mean, really. So, unfortunately,
and it's
a lot
crazy
of,
and there's so much.
It's scary. It's scary.
It is. I tell people, because I also wrote another book, Anybody's Daughter, about child sex trafficking. And
yeah.
I tell people, if your child has a cell phone, the predator has
yeah.
access to your child in your child's
oh, yeah.
bedroom.
No kidding.
It's a different
you
world
know,
we live in.
Well, I had a cell phone, when, you know, not too often. And we had a phone in our room, but my mom knew where I was 24 hours a day. I think she had a GPS on my arm. And if I was going to go to a friend, which I never did after school, or if I was going to go somewhere, I had better call her and tell her. And then she would call the house to make sure I was actually where I was there. And even though she knew it, it was for my own protection. So if I was 5 seconds late, I was going to be in big trouble. And kids don't realize that today.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
Grayland,
yep. It's a different world.
Is
and
a
also
really,
what is.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of them say, well, you can't tell me. Well, you know what? You can. So tell us about Grayland. And what got him in trouble to start with without giving away too much? And what was his
mm-hmm.
father's reaction when this happened? Because I have to tell you, this kid really gets my respect. I'll tell you that.
Like I said, Grayland's really a kind of a good student, A student, does
yeah.
love school, great kid. Somebody sends him a picture that he opens it and possibly like any kid, like, oh my God, I got this scandalous picture, and he saves it to his phone. Then next thing he knows, the teacher is marching him to the principal's office. And once the principal finds, because the principal has got an anonymous call or a report that Graylin has an inappropriate picture of another classmate on his cell phone. And now, and once they have that report, they have an obligation because now they are on notice that there is possibly child pornography involved. And schools are mandatory reporters. They can't just they call in the police and let the police handle it from there. And I think the police are called in. They're questioned. His father comes, and his father's shocked that the police were called in for this incident because the parent, his father's like, well, you know, hey, it's just a picture. What's going on? It's and the whole thing begins to go down a dark hole that it seems like Draylen can't be pulled out of.
I know, it is scary. And as an educator, I have reported it quite a number of times. And, you know, you pray that when you review, you know, something like that, or even child abuse, and I was never wrong. That's what's really scary. So the principal it is scary. The principal didn't have too much power over anything. So he was charged, and what happens to him? And I cried on that page. I was like, oh, my God, you got to be kidding me.
He's actually arrested and taken to juvenile hall, which is a real scenario because of these very serious allegations. And people don't understand. One of the things I said, I'm a lawyer and I don't practice juvenile law. I had no idea that in the state of California, and some states vary, the police can come to a school, question your child without the parent's consent. I was stunned when I learned that through my research, and I called a friend who specializes in juvenile law just to double check, and he said, yes, they do not need parental consent to question a child under a minor in California, and it was stunning to me. And he was actually taken to juvenile hall, and that's where everything goes awry.
It is so scary. I know. It's really scary. And yet, he manages to, he's amazing. So he claimed he never sent the picture. And even if you didn't save it, it doesn't go away, does it? It's still on your phone no matter what you do.
Right. Well, you know, the way that I have an iPhone, and so did Graylin, and what many people didn't know is that when I go to let's say I take a bad picture, and I put it in the trash, I immediately delete it. That picture isn't deleted for a few weeks. Depends on what the settings are on your phone. Like, for instance, I deleted a picture yesterday. If I go there right today, there's a folder on your iPhone that says recently deleted pictures, because what the iPhone is giving you an opportunity to do is change your mind. Maybe you didn't want to really delete it. So I can go to my recently deleted pictures and it's right there. Now, if I delete it from there, it's gone. But the police now have technology that it may be possible to retrieve it later with the technology police had. As a lawyer, I remember having a case where the plaintiff was ordered by the court to turn over certain information on his computer. What he did was erase it. We spent almost $100,000 with forensic experts once we got the hard drive, and we restored much of that information. And because that individual deleted the computer, the case was dismissed because of that misconduct. But it is people you got to understand technology. It's not what you think it is, and the cops and the technologists know a lot more about it than we do.
I know, that's what's scary, is that you think that nobody knows who you are, and then you get all these emails. My God, and a lot of spam lately, an awful lot of spam. You know, your account is deleted or you're delinquent and whatever. And I call like, yeah, that's not true. So Raylan was African-American. Did that have any part to play in it? Did that make a difference? Because that bothered me. Like, why, you know, he's an A student. And they should have looked into the fact that why would he do something to ruin his life and career? He's a bright kid. Would it matter that he was black, or would it matter no matter who did it?
You know, I do think the criminal justice system has a different bent when it comes to to African Americans. I've seen African American boys and men in particular. We know that's a topic of discussion nationwide, and the Black Lives Matter movement and that whole thing. But what people need to understand is police officers have a lot of discretion. You know, it depends on whether, you know, one cop, and I don't think all cops are bad. I think there's only a few bad apples. But that one bad apple who could have an intent to want to do harm. But, you know, sometimes I've seen situations where there's something going on and a cop shows up and it there becomes this manly testosterone thing and it blows up, where another cop could come along and diffuse the whole situation. So in many respects, it's the luck of the draw. Are you going to get a person showing up, someone who's going to look at that and make some judgment? Or is a cop someone who's going to come along and say, I'm going to get you. You did this. I'm going to put you away. And that's why the book is called Abuse of Discretion. What discretion did the cop show? What discretion did the prosecutor show? What discretion did the judge show? That's what I consider an abuse of discretion. And the tagline for the book is, sometimes a crime isn't always criminal. Yes, it was a crime for Graylin to have a naked image of an underage girl on his phone, but sometimes a crime isn't always criminal.
I didn't think it was criminal, to be honest. So,
but you
got Kennedy.
You know, yep. And I think I sent you an article or two, but there are children being prosecuted all across the country for this crime. Girls and boys.
Scary.
And just so you know, girls are... Typically, girls are
the
more
same
likely
thing.
To sext. They are more likely to sext than boys are, you know. And girls mature faster than young boys, I think. And I just want to make that, because I've spoken on this topic, and parents are like, oh, my kid would never do that. You have to understand,
they don't know that.
Kids are growing up in a different world. And your kids are kids. We don't allow kids to drink, drive, vote, or smoke because they're children. They don't have the maturity level. And we got these devices, and they're reaching puberty. They're exploring their sexuality. And like I said, you can't watch a TV commercial without sexual innuendo. Sometimes cartoons have sexual innuendo. So our kids are growing up in this environment. You think about the shows like The Bachelor and The Bachelorette, which are so popular among teen girls. You know, you find a girl who's trying to sleep with the guy within hours of meeting him. We have to understand the images that we are sending. You know, our kids, Kim Kardashian, who's very popular among teen girls, she's famous because of a sex tape, and she's posting naked pictures and nearly naked pictures. And so we can't raise our kids in this sexually saturated environment and expect them to be angels.
I agree with you. You know, it's funny. My niece is becoming a nurse, and we were discussing her paper that she has to present today, and it happens to be on ethics. And the two definitions of ethics are objectivism and ethical relativism. And I'm saying, you know, a lot of kids would just automatically say, well, it's my opinion, that's just the way it is, and if I believe it, it's okay. And they don't realize it, that movies and television and even books and just walking outside, you know, compromises. You have to, you know, understand, and parents don't at times, you know, listen to realize what their kids are doing. As much as saying, you know, you get dressed in the morning to go to school the right way, and then they change when they leave the house. It's scary. They're sending their own messages. So tell us
and
about
I do
Kennedy.
Think parents,
I agree. Yeah.
And a lot of parents, too, are not keeping up with the technology. Oh, I don't understand that. Oh, you need to know your kids are doing. So if you've never heard of Snapchat, ask your kid about it. Learn what they're doing. And Kennedy was, we do not want to give anything away. But is a young girl who is a classmate of Graylin, who finds out that a naked picture of her is circulating the school, and she's very devastated by it. And again, in my research, I found cases where that happened, and some of them end very tragically, because there's a case of a young girl who committed suicide from the embarrassment of having this happen to her. So I don't want to take away the fact that it is a very, very serious subject and have very serious consequences for victims of this crime. And there's been a lot of blackmail. There's a case where two teens are dating, and then finally the The guy says, you know, send me a picture, send me a picture. And the girl doesn't want to do it, but ultimately she does. And he begins to blackmail her. You either do this or I'm going to send your picture around the school. And, you know, it's there are all kind of situations where this is occurring. And it's something, and I'm stunned about how many parents are not aware of this epidemic. But if you talk to the cops and you talk to teachers, they are well aware of it because they are grappling with it every day.
I totally agree. I mean, you've got to really be careful. I just put it on my Facebook wall. You know, parents, you should be vigilant. You should monitor cell phones, check where your children are on the computer. I mean, you could check the history. But you know what I've been getting? A lot of books that I've been reading, and they've been saying, parents, don't look at my emails. It's none of your business. Well, your parents are paying for your internet, so I guess it is their business. And
that's
not enough parents
take me how. Yeah. It's shocking to me that many kids are just calling the shots in their houses and parents are afraid of invading their privacy and all this kind of stuff. But there are a lot of things out there that could get your kid in trouble, and parents need to be parents, not friends.
Oh, I agree with you. You know, I have one niece that's a little too lax and the other one that's just like me and my mom, and they have something called Pinnacle in school. So if you want to know your child is in school, just look it up, and they'll tell you. Basically, schools are supposed to call
that.
If they're apt. Oh, yeah, let me tell you. I have a niece that got herself into whatever, and I straightened her out, even though I'm up in New York. She's in Florida. And I would, you know, go on Pinnacle every day and text her. I said, where exactly are you hiding right now? And now she's in an alternative school. She's not hiding anymore. The other one says, yeah, well, she has an app on the phone, Find Your Phone. She knows where her kids are every minute. You can just find my phone and find a friend's phone. I put those on my phone too, just in case I misplaced my phone. And Pinnacle
is
great,
great
because schools are supposed to call if somebody's absent more than 1 or 2 days. A lot of times they don't, but parents have access to all that information, and it's right there. And it says the grades, the homework assignments, everything. I learned how to do this. This is really great. So as the story moves ahead, Graylin realizes I'm not speaking. I'm going to need a lawyer. So tell us about Angela and Jenny and why they have, in order to help him, they have to put aside their own differences. And tell us about Dre, because I like him. He's your main character. He's cool.
Okay. Angela and Dre, Jenny are, Jenny's actually based on a lawyer friend of mine.
Nice.
And Jenny is basically the expert in juvenile justice. And Angela is a family friend of Graylin, and is how she becomes involved in the case. And basically, they initially butt heads because, one, Jenny's not used to working in pairs, and she'd prefer to handle the case alone. But they work together, and Angela initially makes some missteps. But one other thing that surprised me about the juvenile justice system is the attorney has to listen to the child, not the parent.
Mm-hmm.
The ethical obligation
mm-hmm.
goes to the child. So even though the parents are playing, if the child says, I don't want my parents to know this, and the attorney cannot disclose that to the
mm-hmm.
parent. And Angela kind of feels like, well, yeah, those are the rules, but let's do what's best for Graylin. And at some point in the book, Graylin makes a decision about his case that Angela isn't happy about. Julie isn't happy either, but Julie is playing it by the book, and she thinks she should follow Graylin's orders because she's his client, and that's what her ethical obligation advises her to do. And they basically kind of butt heads. Now, Dre is a family friend of Graylin, and also Angela's boyfriend, and this is my third book in this series. The Dre and Angela series has two other books, Buying Time and Anybody's Daughter, and then Graylin is a book in this series. So if you like Dre, there are other opportunities to read about him. But he is really trying to keep Graylin's father calm, and there's another storyline that comes out of a prior book, Anybody's Daughter, where Dre was involved in an issue with someone after his niece was trafficked, and Dre was able to rescue her. And now that trafficker is in prison, and and he's really put a hit out on Dre, and Dre has to comes up with a really clever way and things work out. But that storyline, I had a lot of fun writing as well.
Yeah, I know this one, but I don't know if you want to talk about him. There's somebody that's running the running things from the jail. And even though he thinks he's immune, the guards are really not very great. So why does it seem that the guards are not there to protect the prisoners, that they're there to take bribes, and whoever can bribe me with the most whatever, money from outside or whatever, gets... And I spoke to an author about a year ago who is representing somebody that is imprisoned for drug use, for whatever. He got 60 or 70 years and he shouldn't have deserved it. So she was telling me exactly this. So why is it that the guards don't appear to really be there to protect the prisoners? They're there for their own good. And they look away sometimes when somebody's getting hurt.
And, you know, I mean, it's just like I said that with cops. Most cops are great cops, but it only takes a few bad apples to taint the whole department, the whole profession. And with prison as well, there are guards there who are on the take, who do things are wrong. And I don't want to paint the impression that all guards are bad.
Mm-hmm.
But I did a lot of research for someone from someone who had served time at the LOW, which is what they call the federal penitentiary outside Dallas. And he walked me through that process of what happens in prison and that prisoners do have cell phones and they do pay guards. And so it was really, really amazing what I learned about the federal prison system. And the federal prison system is pretty lax. You do have far more freedoms than you would in a state prison. And they always say, they call prisons Club Fed. There's a reason they say that.
Oh, my God. You know, I read this and I'm saying, Graylin, I got to tell you, for a 14-year-old kid, he's brilliant and he's really amazing. And they, you know, goes to court or whatever. How come he asked to be tried as an adult? What was his rationale? Which, of course, was a smart rationale. But why was he allowed to be tried as an adult, even though that might make things more difficult for him?
In the juvenile system, there is no jury. So in Graylin's mind, being tried as an adult means that he gets a jury and he has a better chance of getting off. But now in the juvenile justice system, the purpose is not punishment; it is rehabilitation. And oftentimes, a juvenile commits a crime, and once they reach 18, that person could be released, depending on what the nature of the crime is. But from Graylin's perspective, he felt he would have a better shot because in the criminal justice system, if you're faced with a crime, you only get convicted if all 12 jurors agree that you committed the crime and find you guilty. So if one juror says, I don't agree, then there is a mistrial. And Graylin is convinced after talking to someone, just another kid in juvenile hall, that his chances are better off in adult court. And his attorneys disagree strongly on this. And his father disagrees because the consequences are just too severe. Because if Graylin is convicted, he's convicted as an adult, and he doesn't have that protection of being a juvenile and having being released once he reaches adulthood.
Well, he makes his decision, and I'm saying to myself, did he know what he was doing or whatever? But you find out when you read it. So during the trial, we meet Kennedy and her mother and father, and it's just like they're an odd bunch too. And then we meet Taisha and Lachey, and tell us about them. And I didn't like either one of them.
They are two friends of Kennedy, and again, I use them as a means of conveying information and I just typical, you know, teens. And I don't want to give too much away about their role, but you'll find their storylines interesting as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know who I liked even better? Mama Baker.
Oh, I love Mama Baker. She is the grandmother of Lachey, who's raising her, and she is a good Christian woman who believes in right and wrong, and she is involved in a pivotal scene that changes the course of the book. And I like to read books with different storylines. I like to read books that surprise me. And I always try to write in a manner that you think the book is going one way and then we shock you and take you somewhere else. That's always my goal. And I hate when I read a mystery and on page 50, I predict how it's going to end, and it ends exactly mm-hmm. that way. I'm always looking for that bounce or that switch that takes me in a different direction.
I agree with you, and I've read over a couple of thousand mysteries. And I think the saddest one is when sometimes I can tell you after page 5 who did it. I'm good.
Yep.
And yeah. And it's like,
always
and then there are a couple, to be very honest, that are, you know, new authors or seasoned or New York Times authors, and I'm reading the ending and go, you got to be joking. You didn't really end that book that way. And that's what takes it down from your book that's 5 stars and to others that are 3.5 and 4, and then I don't tell them that I posted on Amazon. I won't just, you know, have a fit. But if the ending of the book, it doesn't match the rest of it, and there was one particular book I read, I won't say what it is, I'm saying the ending, why the devil did she kill off the villain? She could have brought her back, and it would have been so much more interesting if the villain
yep.
didn't die. And, yeah, I'm doing a show on June 4th with 4 New York Times authors, and we're going to talk about when the villain wins at the end, what do you do next? We're going to do open endings.
Oh, I guess we got to listen to that show. Who are your authors?
Charles Salzberg, Bruce Coffin, R.K. Belsky, Alan Chopel, and John Lansing so far.
I'm going to put that on my calendar to make sure I listen. I want to even listen live. I don't even want to listen after the fact.
Well,
that sounds great.
Yeah, they're fantastic. I have to email them my billion questions as soon as I decide what they are. And I like to do panel shows because they're just different, and that doesn't mean that I don't have to read a book. I have, to be very honest, on my chair, 20 books that are staring at me say, you have to do them by next month. I go, that's nice. And I've got another 25 on the table. And this morning I got Twisted Pain by John Stanford. That was a surprise. I go, like, where did you come from? And another author sent me a book. I go, how did you know where to send it? I never know. But for those of you that want to know what to read, A Day with Murder by John Land. He's the new Jessica Fletcher books. He started the new series. It's phenomenal. Abuse and Discretion by our author here, Pamela Samuels Young. Alter Ego by Brian Freeman is fantastic. For those of you that don't know, this girl's going to be on the air with the author of Dead Air Monday. And on Thursday, New York Times author Nancy Allen, Walk in the Woods, and she's a little wacky. She's good. On the 21st, look for her. On the 29th, Preordained. That's kind of scary book, seriously. On the 4th, the panel show. On the 6th, Dangerous Places. I'm so booked. It's amazing. On the 7th, I actually contacted New York Times author Philip Donnelly, Speed the Dawn. It was phenomenal. And my last show for June will be with Michael Shusko from Japan, Evil Winds. And then I start back in August because I'm taking July off, people. That's it.
I am honored to be on this on your show among that you know that great cast of authors. Thank you so much
there's
going
to be a whole bunch in August, and August is book people. That's it. No more. I'm going to do the last show in August is going to be on stem cell research. Real stem cell research with a doctor that actually has different remedies or cures for different things. And I'm interested because my mom had Alzheimer's, so anything on Alzheimer's or anything like that, I want to know. So when they question his teachers, how come the court doesn't listen? I mean, educators, you know, some are straight like myself and some are not. But in this case, they love Graylin. Why didn't they listen to what they had to say?
I mean, unfortunately, not just one or two witnesses prevail.
Yeah.
The court and the jury have to take into account both sides. And just because Graylin is a good kid didn't mean he wasn't guilty. I mean, good kids do bad things.
Yeah.
And I think that that's something that again, I think any parent who's listening to this, don't assume your kid wouldn't sext. And I think what's involved today too is a lot of peer pressure. Other kids are doing it. Well, mm-hmm. I can do it. And kids don't expect to get caught. They're not expecting anybody's going to see their phone. There are parents who don't even look at their kid's phone. And I tell there are apps that you can look in real time to see what your kid is doing on their phone. Parents don't even know about these apps, and some parents are so trying to be such friends, they don't even they would consider it an invasion of their kid's privacy to look at their kid's phone. But I tell you, there's devices and ways kids can get in trouble these days. I think it's parental malpractice not to look at your kid's phone. Because I know kids as young as 10 who have cell phones. You have to be, and they're willing to get in contact with them. Well, that's fine, but you got to know what your kid is doing on that phone, and you got to have some rules, and you have to check what they're doing. Because mm-hmm. it could be a kid like Graylin. They're not doing anything wrong. Maybe somebody sends them something inappropriate. And there are schools who punish kids. Yeah.
I agree. And up here in New York, I don't know if it's still, because I retired a few years ago, I would walk down to the bodega to get my mother breakfast because the aides were, watching her. And the aides loved me because I brought everybody breakfast and lunch in the morning. And there were a group of teens that came in. Yeah, trust me. These people were gold. I was very lucky. And
you are.
I walked into the bodega, and the teenagers were there, and they have to give up their phone. Now, I don't know if it's still the same way, but teens are not allowed to bring phones into the public schools up here. At least they weren't until a few years ago. And they would bring the phone into the bodega, which the lady loved, for a dollar, leave the phone there every day, and they would buy food and stuff, and they were thrilled to have them. But this what they were, and they were respectful, and they went to a tough high school. And I'll never forget, I walked in one day, and the kid walked to me and looked at me. He says, "I bet you're an educator." I said, "I bet you're right." He says, "Do you see that Maserati?" I said, "You want that Maserati? Turn around, walk to that school, and earn it." And he looked at me and says, "You know, you got a point there." And he didn't tell me, you can't tell me what to do. It's like, I don't even know you. So the verdict comes in. We won't say what it is. And the ADA offers a deal. Tell us about Sullivan. I didn't like her at all. She's got no feeling whatsoever. Is that typical that they just want to get the arrest done or whatever?
There are people all across the spectrum. There are prosecutors who would have never brought the case. There are prosecutors who are dying to convict somebody. And then there's prosecutors like Sullivan who isn't really high on the case because she has kids of her own. Mm-hmm. But she's got to do her job. And once she's charged with taking on the case, she prosecutes it the way she would normally work. And I kind of like Sullivan because I understand the road that she faces. Because on the one hand, she's not real thrilled and maybe doesn't think this case should even be in adult mm-hmm. court. But now that it's here, it's her job to prosecute it. So, and yes, there are people like Sullivan, and yes, there are people who are even more aggressive than Sullivan. And we've read about cases in the news where years later it's determined that the person wasn't guilty and they're let out of jail, and you'll mm-hmm. see the prosecutor still saying, "I still think he was guilty and I disagree," and even though all the evidence is contrary. So, yes, there are prosecutors like that.
Tell me about it. Been there, done it for a lot of other reasons, and I have a malpractice case, and I'm going to be dealing with that very soon. What a joy. So Graylin makes a hard decision. Would most people do what he did? They made a really hard decision, and I said, I don't know. Would a teen do that? Seriously, because I thought in this case, I think he made the right decision, but would a teen take a chance like that?
I think that because a teen doesn't have the life experience that we have as adults, they think life is fair. And they think, "I'll be able to convince the jury of this or that," and not understand the severe consequences. But I think some adults would have rolled the dice on that because mm-hmm. you're thinking, "I didn't do anything wrong," and you're thinking justice prevails. And unfortunately, in many cases, the justice system is not always just. And their whole Innocence Project is about the fact that sometimes the juries get it wrong, And it doesn't always work like it should work. Hopefully, we like to think that only guilty people are in jail, but we know from the number of cases and stories we've seen on 60 Minutes and elsewhere that sometimes the jury gets it wrong. Sometimes the evidence is manufactured. Sometimes the evidence isn't real. Sometimes the evidence doesn't come forward, or somebody misidentifies. I'll give you a prime example of a case where my friend, who I said was a criminal defense attorney in Oakland, California, he was calling me, and this was he had just gotten a case that he had taken where a guy was accused of murder. His fingerprints were on the gun. There were two eyewitnesses, and there was a confession. And I was like, why are you taking this case? The guy's guilty. And he says, no, we interviewed him. We believe him. My friend actually got an acquittal in that case. Okay? One, the fingerprints were on the gun because somebody gave it to him to hide. The two eyewitnesses were just wrong. And oftentimes, eyewitnesses are inherently unreliable. I mean, and the confession was definitely coerced. And the key to the case was during the trial, my friend was able to cross-examine the cops and to show that they were lying. And it wasn't just a mistrial. He got the guy acquitted. And I always tell people, you know, whether you'll get justice in our courts is often dependent upon the quality of your attorney. Good attorneys make a difference. An attorney like my friend who really fought for that client. And it was such a sympathetic case because he said that the guy didn't really have a lot of money, and all of his family members came together and put up money, and they took the case for a lot less than they normally would have because they believed in the guy. So when you have a great attorney, funny because my friend is no longer practicing criminal law. I think it just wore him out. He's now on the civil side. Great attorneys are worth their weight in gold.
I know, and mine are so-so. There's a book that I don't know if you've read. I make them good because I'm terrible. I sit on them. 14 Lives Changed by Lies, Betrayals, and Deceit. Did you read Anatomy of Innocence? Testimonies of the Wrongly Convicted. And this is a whole bunch of famous authors that actually went to the prison to interview these people because they were innocent. It took over 20 or 30 years to get these people out. And I read this and reviewed it, and
God.
I could not believe. Oh, Anatomy of Innocence.
I'm writing that down.
It was called the Innocence Project. The Innocence Project is a group of people that lawyers and court people that actually care what happens to people in prison. And Lee Child, Philip Margolin, a whole bunch of other New York Times authors went and created this book. And Philip Margolin, who loves me, thank goodness, sent me the book to review. It took me a while because I wanted to make sure that I showcased all 25 stories, which I did. It's probably the longest review in history.
I love that concept that the authors wrote it. Oh my God, you got me excited. Definitely.
Yeah, I haven't gotten excited in a while about a lot of things, but because you know everything is murder and it's the same thing and all the killer blah blah blah.
Yeah.
But when I got your book and some others, and then of course the one for that is on stem cell research, is going to be fantastic. That's the second book. So, parents, you need to monitor your children's computers, iPhones, iPads, social media. And what I told my nephew, and he listened to me, I said, whatever you put on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, scoop it, blurty, and I've got them all, is your resume for school because they're going to look. As a matter of fact, when I was deposed from my case, the first thing the lawyer said to me was, can I have your Facebook account? I said, you could if I wanted to give it to you, but you're not. Instagram, whatever. I said, Google me. See what you want. You're not going to see anything but my book reviews and my pictures and my radio show. I said, you're not going to see anything. And then I blocked them.
But as a lawyer, you need to know that because I've had cases where I've looked up people's stuff on Facebook. And it's important that the lawyer, and because the other side's going to get to you, and you may block them if you want, but I think there are ways around things. So But so
yeah, I know.
And a lawyer, good lawyer needs to look at everything. So.
Well, my lawyer looks at whatever he wants to look at, but it was just, I sat there for 8 hours, and she kept asking me the same question. I go, didn't I ask to that 10 minutes ago? Did I answer that 20 minutes ago? You're wasting my time. Ask me something you didn't answer. At the end of the deposition, she said she never met anybody that smart. And that was the other side. She said, I would hate to come up against you if I have to try this case. I said, you never know. I wasn't, you know what, I wasn't afraid. And I knew I have right on my side, so it didn't matter. So parents need to be explained that you're not invading your child's privacy. I don't know how many teens understand what sexting means. So why should parents explain to their child what sexting is and what happened to Graylin and happens to other teens? A lot of parents don't understand what the word means.
I think just the opposite. I think kids know what it is, yeah. But I think parents don't know what it is. These kids have the phones and they have access to everything. They are much more savvy than I was as a 15 or 16 year old. And because they have the world in their hands, they have that phone and they have the access to the world. And I think parents, you know, my friend who represented a lot of these kids in these kind of cases, he says, it's very, you're sitting across from two professional parents and you're telling their kid about the legal consequences that they're going to face. And they are stunned because they have no idea. Now, the kids know all about sexting and what they're doing. They do not, in many cases, understand the consequences. And I think there needs to be school assemblies about it. There needs to be parents sitting down and talking about it. There's a segment of Lisa Ling's This Is Life series on CNN. She does documentary shows that are amazing. And she does a show where she talks about the sexting epidemic, and she profiles one young kid who liked a girl in his class, so he sent a picture of his private part. And now he is facing sex offender status. And it's really shocking because you can tell the kid is just an innocent kind of, you know, introverted kind of kid and had no idea what he was getting into. And his mother is a single parent who is stunned that her son's entire life is about to be ruined. And sex offender status means you can't be around other kids. You're probably not going to get accepted into a college. Your jobs don't want you. That's on your record. There are life-altering consequences. And parents and kids both need to know about this.
Oh, I totally agree. I totally agree. So this is what caught me off guard. The police questioned him. And I always thought that they needed to have a parent or a lawyer present. Why were they allowed to question Graylin? And does that often lead to a confession because they're afraid? And how come you're allowed to question him without anybody there?
Because that is the state of the law. It depends on what state you're in. But in California, police do not need parental consent or to have a parent there to question a child. It's just the state of the law. And some states are different, but most do not require that. And if a kid is saying, my dad told me not to talk to the police, that is not the same as asking for an attorney. That has been decided by the U.S. Supreme Court. So if your kid is ever picked up by the police, you should advise your kid to say, I want an attorney, not I want to talk to my dad, or I can't talk to you without my dad. Because I can't talk to you without my dad does not mean that the police have to stop the questioning. That was a shock to me. I did not understand that. And I'm a lawyer, and I had no idea. So that is important. Police can talk to your child without your presence.
That is scary. That is scary because, I mean, even the author that I spoke to that was dealing with a man in jail said that a lot of times they offer a plea deal or they just want them to confess so that they could just get rid of the case that's on the books.
Yep.
And that's even scarier because they don't really care. It's a matter of how many cases they have and how many people they want to, you know, put away. It's almost like the police
have
a quarter of tickets.
Like? Right. It's like, what is their arrest record like and what is their conviction record like? It's a personal goal for them in many cases. And again, yeah, I don't want to paint all cops as bad because they aren't.
I know.
But, you know, if you run across the wrong one, your life could be changed forever.
That's scary. They don't realize that. So tell us a little bit about Kennedy's mother without saying too much about her. I don't like her either.
There's always someone in a book that I want to love to hate. And I made that person Kennedy's mother. I made that person Kennedy's mother. She is overprotective of her daughter. She thinks her daughter's perfect, and and as a result of the way she behaves, she is that person in my book that you love to hate.
Well, all parents want to think that their children are perfect, and my mother said I had to be perfect, and I was. But basically, I was, and she knew everything that I was going to do every minute of the day. And if I didn't tell her what I was going to do, thank God my grandmother was there to say it. How she told you, she heard you. So Graylin is amazing. So what happens to him in jail? And why isn't he protected? But he's amazing, this kid.
Part of my research was actually visiting one of the juvenile halls in the Los Angeles area.
Mm-hmm.
And again, there are good people there who are working to do everything they can do, but they can't be everywhere at every time.
Mm-hmm.
And things happen. It's not, nobody wants to be locked away in jail or juvenile hall or prison. And it's the realities of life. You know, fights happen in juvenile hall. And Graylin is involved in something that's it's over quickly, but then he ends up defending himself and really ends up in more trouble as a result of that. He is a good kid, but he's not a kid who's going to be bullied and be picked on. And that's why I like him. I wanted to make Graylin really a strong stand-up kind of guy. And I think I accomplished that.
Not only did you, but I'm not going to give away the ending, but I think you should bring him back.
Please don't.
My hint. No, I never give away endings. So if the judge could speak about Graylin and his behavior without giving it away, what would he say about him?
I think, many judges, they rule their courts like kings. And juries obey and attorneys follow suit. But Graylin, despite the judge even trying to intercede and help him make a decision, Graylin stood up to the judge. And Graylin knew his rights. And early on in the case, Jenny had given Graylin a pamphlet that explained his rights. And, one indication is that he's a smart kid is the fact that he read that pamphlet from cover to cover. And when it mattered, he pulled it out when the judge is trying to convince him to make an important decision that everybody wants him to make. Graylin pulls out that pamphlet and he explains, this is my right, and this is what I'm going to do. And, I love Graylin, and I wanted to make him a strong character. And I think if you love anybody when this book is over, you're going to love Graylin.
He reminds me of me now, because if I think I'm right, watch out. And if I have the backing behind me, I'm going to go after you no matter what. So Graylin is just fantastic, but we have about 3 minutes left on my clock over here. What is next for Dre, Angela, and Jenny? And are you bringing Graylin back? I'm not going to say the ending, but that was fantastic.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, thank you. I probably won't bring Graylin back. Angela and Dre are constant parts of this series. I will probably, I'm thinking about bringing Jenny back and maybe having Jenny and Angela defend another case. I'm actually exploring a case, a book where the lawyer is bipolar. I've had friends and family members recently become diagnosed with bipolar disorder, and I've been learning so much about it. It has such a stigma, but there are people, lawyers even, who are practicing law and who are bipolar if you take your medicine. But I want to explain what bipolar disorder is, and really sort of show another side because people think, oh, my God, my kid's been diagnosed with bipolar, life is over. That is not the case. I've been reading there are a couple of lawyers who've written books, nonfiction books about being bipolar, and I've read those, and I'm trying to really just get the characterization down in my head, and I think that's where I'm going next.
I reviewed my publisher's edit prose for my book, A Daughter's Promise, and A Daughter's Promise deals with my mother's plight and her words with Alzheimer's, and it's all true story. And I reviewed one of the books for them based on a true story for somebody with bipolar. As a matter of fact, I even had a student that was bipolar, and that was tough because you never knew when she was going to go off, and I had to convince the mother that she needed some kind of help and that she could not do what she's doing. She needs to seriously, understand. And I don't know what happened. I know that they finally put her in special ed. Yeah, she needed help, yeah.
And that's part of the problem, that many family members don't want to admit that there's something wrong and that that the person needs help. But once that help is rendered, and even once the medication, is administered and hopefully getting on the right medication, the person can live a normal, productive life. And we know so little, and we have so many negative views about bipolar disorder. So I really want to, like I said, when I first started writing, I never thought I'd be writing about kind of social issues, but it just turns out that when something crosses my mind and I think I don't know enough about it, and I want to use it as an opportunity to educate others and also entertain you in the context of a great mystery.
Well, this was informative, I'll tell you that. And for those of you that haven't read my book, A Daughter's Promise, it's really good. And my caregiver's guide just came out April 2nd, and it's based on people that have people with Alzheimer's, a traumatic brain injury that took my sister, and elder care abuse, which I think is
a very important
issue.
My God, I've always wanted to write about elder care abuse, and I'm definitely going to check out your book because both of my parents are 86 years old. They're doing great, and still they've been married for 65 years, and they're still.
Wow.
I'm the only daughter, and I live a couple miles from them, and check them to the doctor's appointments, check on them, and all of that. But it's
welcome to my world.
Keep my fingers crossed. Yeah, I just keep my fingers crossed that they can still. But they're slowing down, but they're doing well, and I'm thankful for that.
I don't blame you, because my mom had drastic surgeries, and in 2003 she was diagnosed with 2002 dementia, and she knew it, and it just was downhill until she died in 2011. And I kept her home. That's the promise. And what I went through and what we did to keep her home was, I couldn't believe that I did it. And when she died, I was at the hospital, and the nurses didn't know what to do for me. And her own doctor said quite a number of times, why don't you just give it a rest? I said, there's a God up there, and I believe in him. And when he's ready to take my mother, that's when she's going to go, not when you tell me. And he just looked at me. Oh, yeah. He just looked at me, and I said, this is not your mother. Your job is to keep her alive, and if you can't do that, then someone else will. Because there was no way. Yeah, she made me promise. She made me sign a paper never to put her in a nursing home, and my sister came on Thursday, and my brother couldn't deal with it. And when my mother died, and I called my brother, and he said, is she really gone? I said, you're not going to be able to talk to her now, but you can talk to her. She'll hear you wherever she is. And, I couldn't do it. So where can everybody find out more about your work and you, and when is the next book coming out?
You can find out about me at PamelaSamuelsYoung.com. My books are available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And the next book I'm looking for is probably November, December of this year. I'm plugging away and hopefully Hopefully it'll make my deadline.
Well, when you make the deadline, are you going to use PJ for your publicity? Are you going to use her again? Or are you going to do this on your own? Oh, you are. She is good. This way she'll – well, you know what she does? She does is she just says, are you interested? And I don't answer her, and she just sends it anyway. I don't even have to worry. I mean, this is what goes on with Partners in Crime that provides me with so many people. They're phenomenal too, but let me tell you, it gets, you know, I never know when something's going to show up in my book. And then she asked me to read your book, and I didn't answer her. I said, she's going to send it. I'm not even going to worry about it. So I want to thank you so much for today. Anyone that doesn't read Abuse and Discretion, you're doing the wrong thing. And I think I'm going to send a couple of my nieces and nephews a copies of this book, because I really think that it's very, very vital that kids understand that sexting is not funny. Even remarks that you make on Facebook and using bad language is wrong. Just seriously, I think moral ethics need to be reevaluated, and I think children need to remember that if you want to be somebody in this world, you've got to hold yourself to a higher plane. And that's what
I got to add. And I got to add that I released a young adult edition of Abuse of Discretion. It's called Hashtag Abuse of Discretion, which is available in Amazon and Barnes and Noble, and it's really for middle school and up. It's really an adaptation of the book, a shortened version of the book, but it gets the message out just the same. So hashtag abuse of discretion and abuse of discretion.
Well, I think I'm going to speak to my nephew and have my niece is 10, and I wouldn't, she doesn't have a cell phone. She does not have a cell phone. And,
good. That's
which is
good.
Yeah. She has an iPad that she could only use to contact her father when she's with her mother and her mother when she's with her father. And she's monitored closely.
Good,
and
good,
everyone
great.
Else in my family, you know, has phones, but they know better. And this is so important. But I want to thank you so very much. And definitely, when the next book comes out, come, you know, make sure I get it so that I can put you on my schedule, because I've already scheduled some shows for December. I haven't done November yet, but December is getting there. So I want to thank you, everyone. It's a beautiful day, and it's going to rain later. So sit down, read a book, and learn, and buy Abuse and Discretion. Have a nice day, everybody, and bye.